Hi, this is Kevin Conroy, Batman from the DC Animated Universe, and you're listening to Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life.
Hey there, super fans, cosplayers, and comic conventioneers. Welcome to Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. I'm your host, Joe Stuber. Folks, the time has finally arrived. I've been talking about these next two episodes for a couple of weeks now. Here on the show, I've been talking about it and online. If you like Comic Book Central on Facebook, facebook.com/Comic Book Central Network. If you follow the show on Twitter, @ComicBookCTRL, you've seen the pictures, you've read about my adventures at Terrificon in Uncasville, Connecticut. Now it's time to give each and every one of you a front row seat for all the action. It is my two-part treasury-sized Terrificon special, and it's going to begin in just a few minutes. First, though, a reminder that episode 100 of Comic Book Central, the second anniversary special, that's coming up. Oh, it's right around the corner, November 7th, and I want to know all about your favorite moments from year two of Comic Book Central. Anything from episode 51 on. Episode 51 was my conversation with the lovely and talented Lee Merriweather, who played Catwoman in the Batman movie back in the 60s. That's episode 51, so anything from there on, if you thought that episode was super cool, let me know. If there's something you hear in these next few episodes, anything in year two of Comic Book Central, I want to know what you think about it. Drop me a line. It's joe@comicbookcentral.net. I'll get those clips on the second anniversary special. You can even send along an MP3. That'd be cool. Send it along. I'll play those on episode 100 as well. And just like I did last year, I'm going to pick one of those emails at random. So joe@comicbookcentral.net, send me your favorite moment. Got a pretty cool giveaway as well. So I'm going to pick one at random. Somebody's going to get something very cool. More details on that in the shows ahead. So make sure you don't miss a moment of Comic Book Central. You're not going to miss anything if you subscribe to the show on iTunes, so be sure to do that. Leave a review while you're there. I appreciate that as well. By subscribing, you're certainly not going to miss out on any of the fun at the Mohegan Sun. That is where Terrificon took place this year. It was formerly called Connecticut Comic Con, so you might hear me refer to it as such a few times in the show. It's now Terrificon. Next year's show for 2016 is going to be Terrificon. So anything you want to find out about Terrificon, if you want to get a jump on next year's show, check out the website. It's Terrificon.com. My IndieCast buddy, Mitch Halleck, he pulled out all the stops in the new venue. He and his Terrificon team are nothing short of terrific. But what else can you say? I get to moderate three very cool Q&As. I'm going to give you the VIP treatment for those sessions right here on the show. They had guests from the world of comic books, movies, television. Band from TV was there rocking the house. Chase Masterson from Deep Space Nine, she was there performing with High Adventure. Then the folks at High Adventure, they got to play for one of the stars of Indiana Jones and the Temple of Doom. Ki Hui Kwan was there. They got to play the Tale of Short Round for him. So I'm going to bring as much of that three-day weekend to you as I can. Why wait another minute? Let's get right to it. Right from the time my wife and I walked right in the front door, there was so much going on. A lot of displays, a lot of activities. Right at the front there, vehicles from the original 1966 Batman television series. You had the Batmobile there, the Batcycle. They were all autographed by all the cast members from the show. That was pretty cool. There was one guy who was dressed up as an agent of S.H.I.E.L.D. He had this truck there that looked like it could take out an army of Hydra agents. That was really cool. Cosplayers galore. There was a Transformers Bumblebee. I had no idea how this thing even got in the venue in the first place. It was huge. Speaking of a massive display, imagine, if you will, a full-scale replica of the cockpit of the Millennium Falcon. I didn't have to imagine it. It was right there. Builder Brian Coghill, he was at the controls. I jumped into co-pilot. Before we made the jump to light speed, we chatted a little bit about what it takes to bring something of that scale 1,200 miles up the East Coast. As I'm standing here, I'm going to paint a picture since we're on an audio podcast. We're in the cockpit of the Millennium Falcon.
Yeah.
And I'm talking with
Brian Coghill.
Okay, and your company's name?
Is Hangar 18 Props.
Hangar 18 Props. Okay, you brought the Millennium Falcon cockpit to Connecticut Comic Con?
From Florida, no less, yes.
Okay, first of all, how do you do that?
It comes apart. Every single panel in here is a separate piece. Every bolt is numbered. A lot goes into engineering it to make it be able to move and still weigh what it weighs. It's not a little object, as you can see.
There's nothing here that's going to fall on my leg and break it like
not
Harrison Ford's or anything like
no,
that.
No,
okay,
so that's we're, actually, that's we're why safe. I don't want anybody up there right now.
This is safer than J.J. Abrams, is what you're saying.
Yeah, yeah.
This is we're totally safe here. All right, so you bring this. How many stops per year do you make? How many different conventions are you doing?
This is actually pretty much the first convention this one has been at. It'll be
wow,
we'll
okay.
be figured that with man hours, this will be done in about 2 weeks.
This is the inaugural convention.
Yeah.
Fantastic. So, what is missing from menu? Because it looks pretty sweet.
Lights and switches. That's
okay.
really what it is. There's a console that goes right there,
okay.
and then the seats. We have to make sure, and this is a good trial and error, there's going to be humans in here. We have to make sure that we make it safe
and Wookiees.
For them. And Wookiees.
Yes.
That it has to be safe for them. So we want to see how they maneuver in it before we start making structural changes.
Am I your guinea pig?
One of them.
This is what's going on here.
Yeah, I mean,
okay.
it's the first time we've ever set it up near a crowd before, so it kind of tested us to see what we
wow.
did wrong and what we did right,
okay.
and how we go about fixing these
it's
things.
It's pretty impressive. So the things that are missing are the things that Harrison Ford would actually, he was pretending to put,
right.
he was pretending to go on the hyperdrive.
Yeah,
and, yeah,
those switches are missing.
Okay.
You can see some of the detail, like we're faking it with some stage lighting back here.
Right.
But eventually there'll be lights in the different console or alcoves.
Okay.
And then all of this will be lit up with switches people can hit. And inevitably, at every convention, somebody will get excited and just snap a switch in half. So it is a never-ending
yeah.
process where we always have to keep building it and building it and fixing
Star
it.
Star Wars fans right. are excitable. We're
yeah,
saying, you know, a Wookiee just gets in here and just starts throwing it out. You
that's
like
the
Wookiee win.
It's like our TARDIS over there. We constantly have to do repairs on it because, you know, excited fans get, you know, bang it up and everything else. And we're fine with that. We're perfectly good with that.
Now, you know Greg Grunberg is here.
No, I did not know
he's
that.
In the new Star Wars movie. You got to, like, head over there and see if he wants to sit in your Millennium Falcon
cool.
at some point. You
got
to
cool.
tell him we've got a Millennium Falcon over here. So we got to, you know, somebody needs to get on that because
yeah.
you got some Star Wars people here. Who's been here so far coming in that's a pro? Like, did you have any Wookiees in here?
We just actually had a Wookiee come over here not 10 minutes ago
nice.
And get in here. We do a lot of work at the 501st. I make armor for them down in our Florida area.
Oh, okay.
So I'm real familiar with Disney. I used
yeah.
to be a cast member in Star Wars, so it's all kind of second nature to us.
Okay, so is that the origin of this? You sort of got into that world in that way, and then you just want to start building?
I actually got into Disney through that world. I was already doing motion picture special effects at that point.
Okay, so what motion pictures have we seen your work in?
Lethal Weapon 3, Flight of the Navigator. I was one of the guys that built one of the clam, what are called the clam ships in the movie. I was a consultant on Episode 3 of Star Wars, so the Darth Vader armor specifically. I had a website that taught people how to build it.
Nice.
And I was flown out to L.A., and they interviewed me at Celebration 3 in L.A. It was pretty
okay.
cool.
All right, so you're firmly entrenched in the world
yeah,
of Star Wars, and now we're firmly entrenched in the Millennium Falcon.
Yeah, well, and it's the typical special effects person. Like our team, we rub elbows. There's pictures all over our website with all these famous people, and yet no one knows who we are. Because we're always behind the camera. So
well, and that's the way it should be. Because you want the fans to have that experience out there.
Yeah.
And you don't want to see all the behind-the-scenes stuff. But it's nice that we get to take a peek with you today.
Yeah.
As you're in here. And
we were hoping people would be excited to see actually what goes into, like, what ridiculous things you have to do to build
yeah.
a film prop. It's,
you've got some good real estate here. I mean,
yeah.
you're right in the middle of everything, too.
Right
so.
At the main entrance, yeah.
Hey, thanks so much for joining me on Comic
Not
Book
a problem.
Central today.
Nothing quite like being the guinea pig for something very cool like that. That was enjoyable. And they're just crazy building going on all over the place. They're putting this thing, constructing it while we're there. It was kind of like Han and Chewie had the toolbox out. We're working on the Falcon just like they did in Empire Strikes Back. So, yeah, a lot of work that was going on. That was pretty cool to have that thing completed, to watch that thing go up. So if you'd like to learn more about Hangar 18 props, check out the website. It's hangar18props.com. By the way, all the links, everything you're going to hear about in today's show, all those links are going to be up at my website, comicbookcentral.net, in the show notes. So make it easy. All those links will be right there. You can click on them. Now, one of the coolest things about Terrificon is the fact that not only do you get to meet the who's who of Hollywood from your favorite comic book movies and television shows, you get to make a personal connection with the legendary talents who brought these comic book characters into our lives to begin with. This year was no exception. One of the greatest guests there, Roy Thomas, was there. I got the chance to speak to him. I got my Marvel Star Wars book signed. This is the guy who took over as editor-in-chief from Stan Lee back in the 70s. He worked on just about every Marvel title you can imagine. He's the co-creator of The Vision and Ultron. So if you like the Avengers movie this year, you know who to thank for that, for coming up with some of those characters. From the 70s to the 80s, you had Marvel's Secret Wars team of the 80s. Writer of that story, and then Marvel editor-in-chief, Jim Shooter. He was there. Artist Mike Zeck, John Beatty. Not just Marvel. How about some DC action as well? The folks who killed off Superman in the 90s kind of jump-started my re-obsession with comic books back in the 90s. Dan Jurgens, Mike Carlin, John Bogdanov, Louise Simonson, Jerry Ordway. They were all there. Speaking of one Michael Carlin, you're going to be hearing from him a little bit later in this show when we talk some DC animation. Right now, I want to take you back to my conversation with an incredible comic book artist who was at Terrificon. Along with writer Chuck Dixon, he created a vile villain, a monster in Batman's Rogues Gallery. The bad guy who broke the bat. I am talking about Bane, and I'm talking to Graham Nolan. Check it out.
The Comic Book Central, we talk about bringing comic book properties to life, but tell me a little bit about the origins of Bane. How you kind of came into that, and then we'll talk a little bit about how sort of Bane's been represented in different media.
Okay, sure. Well, there was a storyline getting proposed that Denny O'Neill had started setting up called Nightfall, and in it they knew they were going to break down Batman in a way that it's never been done before, because the fans, comics were getting really dark and gritty, and the fans seemed to think they wanted a darker and grittier Batman. So the idea was to take Batman out, replace him with that dark and gritty Batman that people said they wanted, and let's see if you really want that. So we didn't have a villain to do it. We had smart villains, we had strong villains, but we didn't have a really super strong, super smart villain. So the idea of Bane came about for that story need. Somebody passed along the idea of doing an evil Doc Savage as a starting point. And then throwing in the man in the iron mask, you know, the boy in the prison serving his father's sentence and all that kind of stuff. And so that was pretty much the germination. He was created specifically for a story arc, for a need.
How do you think the character's been handled in the comics kind of since then? He's kind of gone through some different things. Your thoughts in those years now, mm-hmm. just in related to the comic book version of it, how do you think he's kind of been handled?
Well, like any property, you know, there's missteps, and then there's return to glory, that type of stuff. There's been some bad representations of Bane, and there's also been some better ones. Personally, you know, I kind of feel like, you know, Spider-Man is Stan Lee and Steve Ditko. The Fantastic Four is, you know, Jack Kirby and Stan Lee, you know, and Bane is me and Chuck Dixon. You know, so the books that we do, you know, I feel are like the canonical books.
Do you kind of like possess them? Like, do you say like they're kids?
I do. I do. Yeah, and when they're not handled properly, sometimes I'm like,
Now, I think I know what I'm getting myself into with this next question, but when you talk about not being handled properly,
yes.
Let's talk about Bane. Of course, we have Batman the Animated Series. So we've
got the best version yet.
Okay.
Yeah.
So when you first saw that, because you probably saw it as it was broadcast, or did you get an early advance?
I saw it when it was broadcast.
Okay. Thoughts right when you first saw him in that? Because that's one of the, if not the greatest animated series.
Yeah.
You go,
well, what made that so great for me was they had Bane wearing the original mask design that I designed for him, because originally his eyes were open, his mouth was open, and actually his nose was open too, because it was to look like a Luchador mask. And then editorial decided they wanted to close all that stuff up and make him more mysterious looking, which I think was a good call, because it's much more iconic, I think. But I was thinking in terms of having to draw the character and being able to express emotions, you know, if I had the eyes and mouth and all that kind of stuff, I could do more with it. But it was a good decision. But the animated series, they did the wrestler mask, and they gave him that kind of Luchador look. And they had a voice artist give him the Latino voice that he should have had in both of the movies.
So that was how you saw the character coming to life in that representation?
I think that was the best.
The closest.
I think that was the best media representation outside of comics.
Okay. Batman and Robin?
And
it's a family-friendly podcast. I will say ahead of time.
Whew,
there you go.
That's a good block there.
I can edit, but
no. I've never seen the movie.
Oh, okay.
I've never seen it. I've
Any
seen parts
to,
of it.
Okay.
You know, I've seen parts of it, and that was more than I ever wanted to see again. So
okay.
Yeah.
And then the latest, The Dark Knight Rises.
That one angers me more than anything else, because I thought they had it right. Outside the stupid mask that they put and changed his whole look at me, I thought they had his character right until the end, until we find out, oh, he's just, you know, that Talia is the puppet master.
He's a minion.
Yeah, and he's just a minion. He's, again, just hired help.
Yeah.
You know, and so they blew it.
Yeah. And it's just not the character that you so represent.
No.
How would you like to see, any particular actor that you'd like to see bring the character to life, or just, I mean, pretty much do the animated series, but have a live-action version?
Well, if they're going to get an actor, let's get a big actor. Let's get somebody, I don't know that The Rock is the right guy, but he's the right size. You know, he'd be perfect, and if they gave him the original mask, then it wouldn't matter what his face looked like, because he'd be all covered up.
Yeah.
You know, and, you know, he's Samoan, you know, he has that almost Latino-type skin color and everything, so he could, you know, he could very easily be, I think, an awesome-looking Bane. He's big, he's tall. You know, Tom Hardy's like 5'8". You know, and they had to stand him on boxes and shoot the camera over his head and all that kind of stuff, you know, and it's movie magic, you know. But just for once, I wish you'd hire a really big guy.
Get a big Bane in there.
Yeah.
What are you working on now? What's the latest that fans can find out, and how can they find out more about you?
Well, they can go to GrahamNolan.com, which is my website. And also, they could go to JoeFrankenstein.com and see the latest project that Chuck and I had worked on. It just came out. The hardcover will be out in about 2 to 3 weeks.
What can you tell us about Joe Frankenstein?
Joe Frankenstein is the story of a boy who doesn't realize his heritage. You know, he's going through life from foster homes. Joe has gone through his life thinking his name is Joe Pratt. And then one night he's delivering pizzas and he gets attacked by a coven of vampires. And he's saved by the intervention of this giant guy in a winter coat and everything. And then it's revealed it's the Frankenstein monster who's been watching over him all his life because he's, in fact, Joe Frankenstein, the last heir of the Frankenstein legacy. And the monster is watching over him as penance for the evil he did, you know, by killing his great-great-great-great-grandfather and all that. The bride, the monster's bride, wants eternal life and doesn't have it. So she keeps herself alive through sorcery and surgeries. But the secret of eternal life is encoded in the blood of the monster, and the key is in Joe's blood. And she needs the two together to decode it so she can get that.
So monster fans, comic book fans.
Yeah. Action-adventure fans.
Graham Nolan fans, Chuck
yep.
Dixon fans. You guys are together again. Man, it's through IDW.
Yep.
And through your website, so we'll look for that.
Yep.
And Graham, thanks so much for joining me today.
Thank you so much. It's nice talking to you guys.
The website again is GrahamNolan.com. And again, all these links are going to be in the show notes at comicbookcentral.net. My thanks to Graham for taking some time to chat with me about Bane. Now, comic books are obviously the theme at Terrificon, but the world of music is certainly well represented at the convention as well. If you're a regular listener to Comic Book Central, and I certainly hope you are. If you're not, hopefully you'll stick around. But if you are a regular listener, you got a preview of what was to take place at the Mohegan Sun this year. Back on episode 86 of Comic Book Central, I spoke with actor Adrian Pasdar. Now, Adrian was not only one of the stars of the hit NBC series Heroes, he is the voice of Iron Man in the Marvel Animated Universe. He is also Brigadier General Glenn Talbot on Marvel's Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. Adrian and his good buddy from Heroes, Greg Grunberg, they were there to rock the house with their band called Band from TV. My wife and I saw them perform Friday night, and it was incredible. A fantastic set. A bunch of television actors took the stage, rocked the house, hence Band from TV. Proceeds went to their various charities. We got to talk to some of them after the show. It was truly an amazing evening. It was fun. Check out the pics on the Comic Book Central Facebook page if you haven't already. You get to see who we hung out with. The next day at Terrificon, Adrian Pasdar and Greg Grunberg stopped by to do a meet and greet with their fans. There were a lot of fans there to meet them. Heroes fans, S.H.I.E.L.D. fans, Star Wars fans. Greg is in The Force Awakens. He's coming up with that movie. So I did get a chance to record a very quick chat with them. Here it is.
We were at the set last night. Band from TV.
Yeah.
We now know you from Band from TV. This is the... Wasn't the first time you played the Mohegan Sun, though?
No, this was second time.
Second time. First time we played was seven or eight years ago. It was my first gig with the band, actually. seven years ago.
That's okay. Right. And
this is my last gig of the band, and here we are.
This is the end of his audition process.
It didn't work out.
You made the band. You made the cut.
He made the band.
Oh, you're done. No.
Yes, but the background check, he did not
pass.
That was
check.
It. I saw some of the videos you were posting online, and it was like you're just kind of keeping everybody in check a little bit. So.
Yeah. Meeting on Heroes?
Did you go Glenn Talbot on him or what?
The best videos I had were the ones, Mad Scientist one on YouTube. If you look at our...
Oh, yeah. Yeah, you got to go to Buckshot 1.
Buckshot 1 on YouTube. And there's one video I filmed of Greg. We literally had 15 minutes between scenes, and we had a science lab set up on level 5, whatever it was for the... can't remember what season we were in.
Yeah.
But he just started going crazy like a mad scientist, and I just followed him around.
I did stupid stuff. It was nothing great. He put this thing together with music. It's so funny. I watched it recently with kids. It's
good.
Really good.
It really
but
is.
All the videos that Adrian did, that was back when it was just starting. People were doing stuff online.
It started as a joke that maybe a few thousand people would look, and then next thing you knew, 10,000, and then 500,000, and then 2 million, and then 3 million. We had 3.5 million hits. On those videos.
Subscribers?
And then you had to be careful what you were doing, too, because he's putting it out there.
Yeah.
I mean, you got to, watch what you're doing, because now he's putting stuff out there.
Now you're not talking like the network. So the network at first was like, what are you guys doing? You don't have authority to do that. You're using the sets. Then they see the numbers. What are you guys doing? Why aren't you doing more videos?
Exactly. As long as the numbers are good, they never care.
They don't care, man.
Okay, so you got some fans. What do you think about Connecticut Comic? I mean, this is your first time for both of you here?
This is the first one here, right?
The first one at this event. Mitch has had for a few years.
Yeah.
This event.
I met Mitch at New York Comic Con, and, this is great. I mean, this is one of the best because there's a lot of people, but it's not too many people. So you're actually able to sit and talk to people and in addition to taking pictures and signing autographs. It's just great.
The line's great. Thank you for being on the show. You're going to be on Comic Book Central.
Yes.
Hopefully shortly we'll
Absolutely.
Get a hold of you.
It's good.
So we'll touch
experience. And these people that come through here are the best fans you could possibly have. It's been my experience. Every single time, the level of the morality and the humanity in this room is some of the best people that I've ever met have been at these cons.
Yeah.
It's really
Thanks,
cool.
Thanks, guys. So. Looking forward to Star Wars.
Of course. Thank
All right.
you. Thank
Not a problem. All right. Take care, guys.
All
Thanks,
right.
Joe.
Thanks.
Those videos that Adrian referenced that he shot behind the scenes of Heroes, they are on his YouTube channel. You're going to want to check those out. They're quite entertaining. Banned from TV, the website is bannedfromtv.org, B-A-N-D from TV.org. If you want to learn more about the guys and gals playing some terrific tunes and doing some great work for charity, check out that website. One of those charities is Greg's charity. That website is talkaboutit.org, and that's to help raise awareness of epilepsy. So be sure to check that out as well. Like I said, it was a very quick chat. I really wanted to give you listeners a feel of the event, to get the vibe of the event. If you want more Adrian Pasdar, check out episode 86 of Comic Book Central. You get that in-depth interview. We talk about everything on that episode. If you want more Greg Grunberg, and honestly, who doesn't want more Greg Grunberg? You can't get enough of Greg Grunberg. I've got that for you as well. Coming up September 19th, mark it down, you are going to hear my in-depth interview with Mr. Grunberg. That episode of Comic Book Central is going to air just a few days before the premiere of Heroes Reborn. That, again, is the follow-up to Heroes. Greg's going to be bringing back his character of Matt Parkman to the show. We'll talk about both versions of Heroes. We're going to talk about Felicity. We're going to talk about Alias, Lost, all things J.J. Abrams. Might even get to that galaxy far, far away. Who knows? September 19th, it's Comic Book Central. It's Greg Grunberg. Don't miss it. As I said, if you subscribe to the show on iTunes, you're not going to miss it. You're going to get all these episodes, so be sure to check it out. September 19th, Greg Grunberg. Banned from TV wasn't the only group making some beautiful music at Trificon, however. High Adventure, as I mentioned, they were there. Not only did they get to play The Tale of Short Round, with lyrics by my IndieCast buddy Keith Voss, they got to play the song for none other than Short Round himself. Actor Ki-Hui Kwan was there all weekend. That was very cool, and it was a very cool moment when he stopped by High Adventure set, and they were able to play the song for him. Here is a little snippet of that moment.
Ladies and gentlemen.
Hey, it's Key, everybody. Come on in. Take a front row seat, young man.
They got a special song for everybody.
All right. All right, you're prepared. Okay. You want? All right,
we are here with a special guest. We wrote this song for you about 3 or 4 years ago. We've been playing it ever since, and it's an honor to sing it for you, sir. Short round, everybody, right in the front row. This is called... This is one of those moments that make life worth living. This is called The Tale of Short Round. Here we go. Hold on to your potatoes, I've got a story for you. About a boy named Short Round and all the things he did do. Raised on the streets of Shanghai, parents died in a raid. He had a knack for picking pockets, the only money that he made. He stole Indy's wallet, but got caught in the act. Shorty couldn't get away when he heard that bullwhip crack. Indy listened to his story, knew the kid's life was hard. He said, stay by my side, be my little bodyguard. Holy smoke, crash landing, some lady fell from above. They had to get out quickly, there was no time to love. Indy shot off a few bullets, then Willie lost a gun. To Shorty it didn't matter, he was just having fun. Oh, Short Round, Short Round, he's got aces up his sleeve. Short Round, Short Round, speaks in Mandarin Chinese. Short Round, Short Round, listen to me more and you'll live longer.
Be sure to check out highadventuremusic.com for more about the band, and be sure to check out the next episode of the IndieCast at theindiecast.com, where you're going to hear a little bit more of that and my indie-themed adventures at Terrificon, including my visit to the Tanis map room from Raiders of the Lost Ark. That was amazing. You just heard a little bit of the band High Adventure. They were there, as I mentioned, all weekend as well. They got to play a jazz set Saturday night with none other than Star Trek Deep Space Nine's Chase Masterson. Chase was there meeting fans earlier in the day at the convention. I had a chance to catch up with her as well. Is this first time here at Connecticut Comic Con?
It is my first time at Connecticut Comic Con, but my family is from Connecticut.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, and I spent some growing up years here.
Okay, so you get the chance to touch base with family.
Yeah, I have. Yeah, okay. It's been really nice.
All right, now you're not only signing for fans today, you're interacting with fans, talking to Star Trek fans, you're actually performing here at the event too, aren't you? So tell us a little bit about what we can expect, and I think Batman is going to make an appearance
herself. I think he is, yes. Okay. That's in a different part of the show. I'm just doing 3 songs tonight, which is going to be fun. I love when we get to do other stuff at conventions. It really kind of rounds out the experience for the fans. And I started singing several years ago at conventions. I'd been singing since I was a little girl, but several years ago picked it up at conventions. And I have 3 CDs, and the fans have been so supportive. It's really, really nice to be doing the music. I'm doing this fundraiser for the Anti-Bullying Coalition that I founded. It's called the Pop Culture Hero Coalition. And so it's a wonderful cause, really. It's the first ever work at Comic-Cons and Star Trek-Cons to end bullying, to stand up against racism, bullying, cyberbullying, misogyny, and all of that. And I really feel like we're doing some fantastic work. We've been told we're saving lives. We have a booth set up, not this size, but a real big booth at a lot of conventions, and we're able to talk with fans and bring in doctors of psychology who help. And,
wow. Yeah. Okay. Is there a website or something that people can learn more about this?
Yes. PopCultureHeroCoalition.com.
Okay. So people can go and find a little bit more about that and donate if they want to. So.
Yeah.
Now, you're getting a lot of Star Trek fans here coming in, but this isn't your last time in the world of comic books and superheroes. You've recently been on an episode of The Flash.
Yes.
That we've seen. So, yes. And John Wesley, the original Flash is right down the road too, so I don't know if you got a chance to touch base with him. What was it like kind of getting back into this world of these pop culture superheroes and being on the set of The Flash and working on that episode?
It was really wonderful. Andrew Kreisberg wrote the role for me, so I didn't have to audition or anything.
Oh, that makes it nice.
Yeah, it was really nice. I got to work with Jesse Martin and Carlos Valdez, 2 fantastic actors. And I love the show. I mean, The Flash has fantastic themes. It's not just a superhero show. It's a show about courage and justice and family and all the great themes that are so important in entertainment and life and science fiction. And I've been having a great time being part of that
Any chance we can see another appearance on there, or maybe on Arrow?
We'll see.
I know you can't say
maybe
anything
yet.
Maybe
if you asked on Twitter, we can retweet it.
What do we need to hashtag on this to get you on? We want to see more of you.
The Flash and Chase Masterson. I'm at Chase Masterson on Twitter. And, tweet me there.
And website beyond the...
At chasemasterson.com is my website.
Okay, and I see you're selling earrings. What's the hypo...
Fan club member created this. Thank you. They're Leetenum, which is actually our version of Gold Press Latinum, and it looks exactly like Latinum, and it's really super fun. They're part of the fundraiser that we're doing here. 100% of the proceeds from everything we're doing is going to the work of the coalition.
Oh, fantastic.
Yeah, it's
good.
Oh,
wow, that's amazing. So people can be part of the Star Trek experience and do something great in the process,
yeah,
too. So it was great catching up with you again.
With
Have
you
a
too.
Great convention.
Thank you, I will. Thank you so much.
Have fun catching up with family, too.
Fantastic. Thanks so much. Great talking with you.
If you want to learn more about Chase and the Pop Culture Hero Coalition, check out the websites chasemasterson.com and popcultureherocoalition.com. All right, kiddies, the time has come. Step right in, take a front row seat for the DC Animation Q&A. That was my first session of the weekend. What a way to get things started. A packed house, two stellar guests. Look, you can't talk about DC Animation without hearing from the head of DC Animation. He's also part of the team that killed off Superman in the comics back in the 90s. That book reinvigorated the comic book industry. Mike Carlin joined me on stage, as did the Dark Knight detective himself, the voice of Batman in the DC Animated Universe, Kevin Conroy. Now, folks, apologies in advance. There was a lot of setup involved. I missed myself introducing both of them. I missed the crowd greeting them. So I'm going to pick up the recording with Kevin talking about getting the role of Batman and how his initial perception of the character coming to life came from the original Batman TV series featuring Adam West. Check it out.
Bam, pow, pop from the 60s. And they said, no, that's not what we want. And Bruce Timm said, no, it's very dark. His parents were murdered as a child. He lives in the shadows. He's avenging his parents' death. It's more of a psychological drama. It's more film noir. And I said, well, you're describing a Shakespearean tragedy. You're describing Hamlet. You're describing a lot of classical roles that I've played. And he said, well, just use your imagination. So it was really just a case of an actor using his imagination. I really had no background in what they wanted. And the interesting thing about casting that I think a lot of people don't understand who aren't in the business is they usually don't know what they want until they hear it. So you ask them what they want when you go to an audition, normally they can't tell you. They're waiting to see it or hear it. So it really is often up to an actor making a lucky choice in an audition, because someone may be perfect for the role, but if they don't make the right choice during the audition, they won't get the role because no one sees it. No one knows what to ask you to do. So I just put myself in the position psychologically that I was described by Bruce. And it took me to this very dark, kind of intimate place. And the sound came out. And as I was doing this voice and doing the lines, I looked up and I saw in the booth, everyone had just stopped. Bruce and Paul and Andrea stopped. And then all of a sudden I saw everyone moving around really quick and dark. And I thought, well, I've either done something really horrible or really, really good. They virtually offered me the role that day. They said, you're perfect. What you're doing is absolutely what we want. So it was just an odd sort of hand-in-glove moment of my classic theater background training me to approach the character completely with no preconceptions and just make the right acting choice that day. But as it evolved, it turned out to be a great relationship. I work wonderfully with Bruce and Paul and Andrea and I. We've all become very close friends. And we just work great together. And we inspire each other. And Andrea likes to get actors in the room together. So, and a lot of people also don't understand that we get the scripts first. So it's not like a radio play because the actors feed off each other. So there'll be six or eight of us in this large recording room together. And Mark Hamill and Adrian Barbeau or Paul Williams or Ephraim Zimbalist Jr., the original cast, Bob Hastings, will all be in there feeding off each other. And so this crazy kind of energy would get going in the room, and especially between Mark Hamill and myself. We just feed on each other and get each other going, and we would go wild in there. So these recording sessions were kind of got out after a while that they were incredible, and they were a blast to be in. And so everyone wanted to be on the show. And Andrea said, you know, she was getting requests from everyone, from all these agents, all these actors. Everyone wanted to come in and do Batman episodes. So the cast was extraordinary. If you look at who was on that original show, they had anyone they wanted they were getting. So it was a wonderful experience that I'm just so lucky to have been a part of.
And I think I'm not sure many people know this too, but even when you're doing the Bruce Wayne and Batman characters, those early episodes, you had to go back and even just re-record some of it, just finding the tone of the character even.
Well, it was my idea originally. I said to them, you know, because I was approaching this character fresh. I said, look, let me get this straight. He's the richest guy in Gotham. He's the sexiest, most eligible bachelor. Everybody knows this guy. He's the, you know, he's the guy in town. And he puts on a mask and no one knows it's him? I said, seriously? I mean, I don't believe it. Will anyone else believe it?
Here, watch this.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You'd never recognize him, right? So I said, let me, you know, be an actor. Let me try doing a different voice. Let me try really making it more convincing. So that's when I came up with the different Bruce Wayne and Batman voices. And it worked great. But initially, early on, I did Bruce Wayne as a real playboy. Really, a lot of sarcasm. I used sort of David Niven as my visual. Very, very urbane, very sophisticated, lots of humor. And they wrote a lot of humor for me. So there was a big difference between Batman and Bruce Wayne initially. But as they came back from the artist, they realized since they were painting it on a black background, the stories were very noir. It looked really dark. It was kind of jarring when suddenly Bruce Wayne would come in and you'd have this light kind of comedic character. It was too light. So they had me actually go back and re-record the first about six shows just to darken the Bruce Wayne voice a little bit, just to bring down the distinction a little bit. And then over time, they had me even bring it down more, so that ultimately, in the later, Justice League, the later evolutions of the character, the distinction is pretty subtle. I thought the earlier distinction was a lot more fun, but that's just an actor, you know, liking to play different roles. They just thought that it was a little too jarring, given the dark palette of the show.
And Mike, talk a little bit about what Andrea Romano brings in, because we're talking about the history of DC Animation. So you think about all these projects, regardless of whether Kevin's doing the voice of Batman or Tim Daly's doing the voice of Superman, you have all these different actors, but there's one consistent thread that kind of weaves through all of these different things, that's Andrea Romano. Talk about what she brings to all of this and why this just makes us love DC Animation
so
much.
Well, the thing that's great about Andrea is that you even know who she is. Most voice directors on video games or animation or whatever, you've never heard of them.
Right.
This is a testament to fans, is that they paid attention to the credits, and they actually give credit to who's doing whatever job. And obviously, on video extras or on panels, Andrea is a personality. But what I've noticed just from watching her in action with these guys is that they completely trust her. Mm-hmm. Whatever she says is a good idea, even if it's not the choice that's used in the final animation. They may go with what the actor did first, but she's always worth listening to and trying to.
Well, Andrea started as an actress. She studied to be an actress in the theater, and it just, you know, she's one of these people that starts in one way and ends up in another. So she understands how actors think, and she respects actors. A dirty little secret in the business is that a lot of people don't like actors. They think we're spoiled. They think we're narcissists. They think we're overpaid. They resent actors. But a lot of people really love actors. And to work with someone who understands you and loves you, it just, you know, there's so much trust there. They get such a better performance out of you. And actors know that Andrea loves them. And she knows how, if you tell an actor, No, say it like this, and you give a line reading. It's the fastest way to get the line reading, but it'll be empty. because all you'll ever get is that person mimicking you. As hard as they try not to, all they'll do is mimic you. But if you say, no, think about where you're coming from. Think about what this guy did to your family. Think about how you're driven to this. Think about the number of years you've wanted to get there. And then you come out with that rage. It's organic. It comes from something. They've given you the thoughts behind it. And then it's real. Andrea knows how to talk to actors. She knows how to guide you to the reading she wants without giving you the line reading.
That's funny because the first 35 years that I was in the business and working for DC, I was editing comics. And for me, what I noticed in a good editor was that they made themselves the person that the writers and artists wanted to do a good job for. It was like their personal success if the editor said, oh, this is amazing, this is great. And I think, and just in the last 5 years that I've been watching the DC animation, Andrea is somebody who you guys want her to say, oh, that was great, or that, oh, I never would have thought of that. And it's all about this, it's the trust, but it's also the loyalty almost too. She builds up a loyalty. She's got a lot of people who will work for her. Now, the other secret about voices in animation, not just actors, is that it doesn't pay as much as you would think it would pay. So,
finding out all the dirty little
secrets today. I think we're really rich.
No, we don't.
Bruce Wayne rich.
Yeah, Bruce Wayne rich. That's why you can be David Niven whenever you want.
Yeah, exactly.
But the reality is that a lot of people will work for what the animation can afford, just because they get a chance to work with their pal, Andrea, again. She's got, it's not even favors, it's just fun.
It's fun.
Yeah.
And it's Mike, fun. We think about casting too. We're talking about how difficult is it to just not go with Kevin for every Batman role that comes along?
It's impossible.
Unfortunately, you do not get any percentage.
It has been possible. But the hardest part of it is that you all get really mad at everybody. And you guys are the ones who really you resist change.
But talk about that process of just like maybe picking another Batman or going in a different tone, or how does that sort of, because we have a lot of different Superman.
Well, the direct-to-video movies that DC's been doing were purposely started to kind of get away from the Bruce Timm look. Bruce Timm was still involved, but they wanted them to seem fresh because it was already 15 years into it, and now it's 25 years into it, and it's a good idea to kind of scrub the barnacles off the ship and freshen up the paint and that kind of thing. It's not always accepted. At the same time, I think that there have been some good tries and good versions. That's one of the best things about the comic book business and these characters is that they're very flexible. You can have Neil Adams draw Batman one day, and you can have Kelly Jones draw him another day. They don't look the same, they don't act the same, but they're Batman. And I do think that Batman is a flexible character and can accommodate other actors taking their shot. That being said, it's always fun when Zero Mostel comes back to play Fiddler on the Roof years and years later, and it's great when Kevin comes back to do Batman, and it really is. You know, it's a return to something that everybody appreciates, and that's always a good thing.
There's a nostalgia factor, I think,
too. We've got room for every version of Batman. There's so many Batman projects out there that you can really pick the flavor you like the best and stick with it.
I never thought anyone would come close to Mark as the Joker. His Joker was just inspired, and it is. And then I saw Heath Ledger's performance, and I thought, wow, this is just...
That was a revelation.
This is crazier than crazy, you know. But Marx is crazier than crazy. They're both brilliant. They're just brilliant in different ways.
The other amazing thing about the casting process is, who in here before Mark Hamill did the Joker would have ever thought of Mark Hamill doing the Joker?
Exactly.
That's something that somebody thought of. Or even if it was just that Mark's agent said, Mark is a really big comic fan, and boy, he would love to do anything on this show. Somebody said it's okay for him to be the Joker. Paul Williams is a Penguin. I wouldn't think of that. Mm-hmm. It's amazing leaps of faith that you have in actors, and then they come through. And that's the success of that whole series, is that there wasn't a misstep. in the whole series.
Yeah. The cast was tremendous, really, and it went on into the Justice League and a lot of other things. So I'm sure you guys have a lot of questions that are coming out there. So what we'll do is we'll take let's throw it out to the audience for a little bit. I think these guys up here have a few things that they want to hand out too. So if we get,
Somebody's gonna have to vote on what a good question is. You're the guy who votes.
I think I took all your stuff here too. So
this is pretty
cool stuff.
We got goodies.
There's goodies here. So yeah, we got some. You guys have some questions.
I brought the movies that you're involved in.
Okay. Which are many movies. So why don't we take they're right up front here.
That one's already got Bruce Timm's signature on it, too, so that's a good thing, too.
Stand up and use your outside voice. Yeah, give us a good question.
So, as far as, I know we've been talking about the history of DC Animation, what about the future of DC Animation? They've announced the Killing Joke.
What?
Question one, bro. Killing Joke. I
understand Mark Hamill's interested in coming back.
Right, I heard Mark Hamill's interested. Kevin, are you interested?
I would love to do it.
Are you interested in Kevin as Batman in the Killing Joke?
Everyone's interested in Kevin as Batman.
You guys understand how long in advance that you have to actually record voices for these movies?
Well, yeah.
I hope these guys come back.
I think that does lead us into do we got something we could give out? There's a I didn't expect the Killing Joke question out of the bat, but
You probably should get the Bruce Timm and
the Bruce
Kevin
Timm the
Conroy,
Great Ghost. There you go.
Conroy signed.
There you go.
Thank you so much.
That does lead us into the question though. How do you choose those projects? Because obviously the Killing Joke, that's a huge story to get into. And a lot of these DC direct-to-video, even when you start off with Superman Doomsday, it's a project that is near and dear to your heart when you go back. How do you decide which story arcs to kind of bring about? And are some of these field testing live action elements later, like Suicide Squad and things like that?
Well, the thing is, there's even with all the comics that have ever existed, there really are only a handful of classic stories that are great beginning, middle to end, masterpieces. You get to do Dark Knight Returns eventually, that kind of thing. Year One is a great story, and it stands the test of time. Killing Joke is one of those, but it's also been a scary one to get to, because it's pretty rough. It's really rough material, and it's also short. It's not really long enough for a whole 72-minute animated film. So it took a while to get to it. Sadly, real-life things like a guy shooting up people at a Batman movie also push things back when we want to get to them, because it becomes a little too sensitive.
Yeah.
And these are all part of the backstory of why Killing Joke has taken so long to happen. Bruce had stopped doing the direct-to-video movies for a while, and James Tucker has been doing an awesome job on them. But it was also the kind of thing that you kind of want to wait for Bruce to be back in the arena and working with Batman again. And the timing was just right. Other movies that we decided to do, like Doomsday, was a big story for Superman. Even having worked on Superman, there's not a lot of big stories that could stand a translation to Superman. So we tend to do a lot of original stories that take elements from a whole bunch of different stories and make it into something that's new. We've also started doing these, the stories are now all kind of linked together, and it's a one universe, so it's a shared universe. It's not the New 52 per se, it's its own thing. It's the animated universe. And so those stories kind of live in their own place, enabling us to do things like have maybe a Teen Titans that has Damian as the Robin who's in the Teen Titans, which would be different. Is it going to be good? We always hope so. But it's also going to be something that you can't even get in a comic book. It's going to be something you can't get anywhere else. It's not necessarily a test for future movies, but the stuff that works in animation, movies definitely have stolen from animation. Harley Quinn's going to be in a movie. That's awesome. That's amazing. And the Suicide Squad animated movie that we did knowing that there was going to be a Suicide Squad movie, and it really was just a way to get that name and term and those characters out there to the universe, to people who may not have been familiar with the comic books from 20 years ago. So it's been, everything kind of goes hand in hand, and whatever works, moves on, and goes on to make me movies or other animated movies, or sometimes into the comics. Characters are now coming from our TV shows and going into the comic books. You know, Felicity Smoke came from the comics, but she was a super minor character in Arrow. Now she's on TV, she's really popular, the actress is great. Now the creators of the comics want to put that character in the comic. And it's just like everything feeds off each other, and what becomes popular is popular because it's popular. I don't know if that makes any sense.
It is. Good question. Yeah. Let's go to the back of the room. There's somebody in the back. I see a hand all the way right behind Green Lantern back there. Yeah, all the way. Yeah, in the gray. You. Yes, you. You. It's
oh,
you.
Oh, no. It's you.
It's you. Use your outside voice.
Speak
and
up.
Yell it.
In terms of recording the original Batman, the animated series, Kevin, which episode did you find you enjoyed or had the most fun recording? Mm.
I really enjoyed recording Dreamscape and Perchance to Dream. Those are two of my favorites. And Mask of the Phantasm, which I think is... I think it's the best Batman movie of all the Batman movies, the live action or animated or anything, because it gets into the whole background of Batman, Bruce Wayne. It tells you that whole backstory and his passions and why he's driven to be what he is. But Perchance to Dream and Dreamscape I really liked, because actors just like to be challenged, and I got to do a lot of different voices in those ones.
Well, the Phantasm actually reminds me that we should also... We're talking about Paul Dini and Bruce Timm. Alan Burnett has been with the project from the beginning. Mask of the Phantasm is really great, and Alan is still involved in all our direct-to-video movies, and he's involved in some future projects that we can't tell you about yet. But I think he's the unsung hero of all of the Batman and Justice League animated series.
And he's another guy who likes actors.
Yep.
It's so great to work with some of you. You just know... passionately likes what you do and has your interests at heart.
He's such a fan of Hollywood and movies, and he really, you know, like, he lives it every day.
Yeah, he does.
And
he's a great guy.
Great and knowledgeable.
Good question. Do we have a Batman something we can get?
Yeah,
come on up here and grab your, or somebody hand it back to him. So you got that one?
Yeah, that one signed.
There you go.
What's your name?
Elias.
Elias?
E-L-I-A-S, but it's pronounced the same way.
He doesn't care at all. I thought you were going to pick the one where you sang Am I Blue? That wasn't your favorite episode?
No, we should ask him what his least favorite episode is.
The one where you get to sing Am I Blue?
Thank you very much.
That's a good question. So, what else we got? Right over here against the wall? Yes, in the gray t-shirt. Yep.
So, speaking of more Batman the Animated Series episode, for the episode, I think it's called Where the Gray Ghost, or the one with the Gray Ghost, what was it like working with...
I was a little intimidated when he came in because I thought, you know, this is the guy who, you know, established his career doing this and was the voice that I grew up with and the character I grew up with. Couldn't have been more gracious. He's the greatest guy. He's an easy guy to work with. He's very open to ideas. He's... Some people, as they get older, get stodgier. Other people, as they get older, get younger. He's one of them, and I hope I'm one of those people. He's one of those people. He's so youthful. He's got such a flexible mind. He's a very easy guy to work with. I like him a lot. But you're right, I was a little intimidated when he came in.
We talked about this on Comic Book Central, too, when I interviewed you, and the fact that these people don't age. Adrian Barbeau, she doesn't age. Adam West doesn't age.
That is weird. It's like the land that time forgot.
Yes.
Some of these people, Adrian Barbeau looks exactly the way she did 30 years ago.
I was watching our match
That's
game,
a good
and she's
thing.
The same thing.
I know, it's a very good
it's
thing.
It's an amazing thing. Go watch one thing. You'll love it. So, we got something over here. Yeah, let's, yep.
Of all of the Batman that you voiced, which would you say was your favorite?
Well, the first is always the most fun. You know, the original classic Batman. But I have to say, old 80-year-old Bruce was fun.
Where did you find the range for that? The kids, you got like a real
down in my balls.
What's the PG?
There are no children here, are there?
DC Animation's going PG-13. We know that. So
I'm
was talking about beach balls.
What else we got? Yes, of course you were.
I'm seeing a hand right in the middle. Wave your hand. Yeah, there you go.
So I remember you saying earlier in the panel about how everyone gets together and you all voice together as like an ensemble. And that reminded me of this Justice League episode that you did where you argued with yourself for about 3 minutes. I kind of wanted to ask you how that was.
That was the most enjoyable acting I've ever done.
Are you your favorite co-star?
I've never worked with such a pro.
who won the argument?
I did! No, I did.
No, it's fun. That's why, actually, it's terrible to admit, but that's why I liked Dreamscape. Because, Batman is drugged, and he goes back into his past. And he dreams about his childhood. And I did young Bruce Wayne, adolescent Bruce Wayne. I did Batman. I did drugged Batman. And then I did Thomas Wayne. So I was doing four voices in the same episode. They all had to be believably related, but distinct. So I said to Andrea at the beginning, I said, can I do this in real time? She said, you mean have arguments with yourself? I said, yeah, let's just see if it works. So we did it both ways. We did it in real time with me jumping back and forth in voices, and then we did do blocks of voices so that they'd have clean takes. But it was just, it's just fun. Actors like to get challenged. Everyone likes to be challenged at work, you know. So I love being challenged by things like that.
All right, so we got a Batman right here, Batman question.
When you did Return of the Joker, it was a pretty, like, that
thank you.
Sure.
There's a pretty gritty part in that movie, I'm not going to lie. There's a very gritty part. You know, I gotta say, it's when Drake shoots him, and that's like,
he told me the end.
Spoiler ruined it for everybody.
Spoiler alert.
How did it feel like when you were watching just like the playback of that? How did it really feel?
We're always when we see, you know, we don't see those scripts a lot earlier than when we record them. We get them usually the day before or something. And I'm often very shocked at what. We get no warnings at all. No one ever tells the actors anything. You know? Like the second Arkham game where Joker died. I said, what? This can't happen. Well, everybody's played it. It's been out for years. That's just like so... It's amazing when you see stuff like that. So we actors don't see this stuff a lot earlier.
You're kind of like the first viewer, first customer.
We are like the first customer. We see the finished script. Then it's shocking. Sometimes it is shocking.
I think that is one of the, I don't know if it's the first one, but it was certainly one of the more earlier sort of violent kind of takes on the, it showed that DC Animation was heading, it's kind of a darker direction. Talk about the decision to go either PG or PG-13.
Talk about how violent they feel comfortable writing.
We've gotten some R ratings that we've had to trim things out of the latest movies that we've done.
Used to be that there was always a what they call a dying moan whenever a character would fall.
Yeah, stay alive.
You'd always hear the stay alive moan. You'd hear, because no one died in these shows, you know?
It was like the A-Team. You never really saw anybody fall. They'd just go over a fence and you assumed they were okay. we offer these PG-13 movies. But we also offer Lego movies with Batman, and we offer Batman Unlimited, which is it's for kids. You know, people who like the PG-13 movies may not like those movies. But it's in our interest to put out a Batman for everybody and to keep him... that's what keeps him evergreen. You know, he moves through time, because if you're a 7-year-old and your first exposure to Batman is in a Lego movie... you're still going to want to see what Batman's like in other stuff as you get older. So it really is, it's good for everybody to have a character for them. You know, it's like we have Teen Titans Go on the air right now. That's not a Batman thing, but Batman is in it.
Batman Brave and the Bold.
And this stuff is, it's out there for the next generation. And it's the fans who don't like that stuff, it's okay if it's not for you. It's for your little brother and little sister, and they're going to grow up, and then they'll join you in watching the nasty, violent PG-13. Yeah.
And the lesson for me, too, has been also the different levels of audience that these shows reach. There are all these different types of audiences for these shows. And I had a young woman come up to me at the Chicago Comic Con and say, she was so emotional, and she said, I have to thank you. You got me out of the projects. And I said, what? She said, everyone I grew up with either ended up dead or in jail. But I had you every afternoon to watch on TV. And you were my escape valve. And you kept me interested in school. And you're the reason I ended up going to university. I said, wait a minute. You're the reason you accomplished all these things. You're the reason you ended up going to university. She said, yeah, but I had you to focus on it. And it made me realize how important animation is to so many young people. It's such an escape from horrible lives. It can be. I mean, my adolescence was pretty screwed up. People have all these complicated lives, and the escape of animation is so important, and it hits people on so many different levels.
It's not just animation. It's this fantasy world of comics, of TV. It's a place to go to get away. I know when I was a kid, everyone in my neighborhood, we all grew up together, everyone was friends, we'd play softball together, do all the things, until my friends started becoming juvenile delinquents. And it was in my interest to not join them, because as the fattest kid, I ran the slowest. Caught by the cops. And I'd have to rat on everybody. I couldn't even bear the idea, so I just went home and read comics and practiced drawing and studied animation in high school. And I went where it was safe for me, and I think it's important to just always remember that. So
I think you see the age range of the room here too, and it just hits everybody on every level, which is just amazing too. Your question, yes, right in the middle.
Yes, if you in a sense could work with another actor whose voice inspired you and could play a dastardly evil villain, with whom would you work and why?
Me?
They never asked
me. Mike is a dastardly evil villain.
Who the other actor would be a dastardly evil villain?
Yeah.
Who would that person be?
Against Batman.
Against Batman?
Someone with whom you haven't worked, but would like to.
Oh, God, there are a lot of actors I really respect. There are so many actors I respect right now. I think Hugh Jackman's an incredible actor. I love his performance. And he has great flexibility. So I'd love, he always plays heroes. I'd love to see him play a really dark, dark, nasty villain. Casting is so interesting. Like in Gotham, the show that's on now, the guy they have playing Penguin is so evil. My God, he's so obsequiously oily and evil. But I would never have thought of casting him in that role.
Yeah, it's great to.
But it's perfect, you know. So sometimes not exactly going with the most obvious choice is great. It's just you just want to get actors with really good imaginations who can really play with you. And I think Hugh Jackman might be one of those kind of actors. I think he's really good.
Good question. Somebody just waved their hand over there. Who's right behind? Yeah, go ahead, Flash.
Sure. This is a question for Kevin. When you were recording with Mark, did you guys ever switch roles? Did you have it for fun?
How bored did you get, Kevin?
Well,
joking here.
Betty.
That was actually pretty good. Is it a radio play?
No, I don't get to do a lot of character voices. Just I don't know why, but I just don't get to.
You're Batman.
Because I'm Batman. But we have goofed around a lot. Actually, there's a funny story. When we first were doing the show, QVC was selling a limited edition, 100 prints, I think, maybe there were 1,000 prints, of Batman and Joker standing next to each other, back to back. Maybe you've seen them because they're sort of traded now on the market. And we were sent to QVC to hype these things. And this is like in 93 or 94. I mean, this is really early on. And it was still done out of a a warehouse in rural Pennsylvania. So we were flown into Philadelphia, were sent out in a car to the woods in Pennsylvania. And I think, what, who's ever heard of QVC? No, we didn't know anything this stuff was. And there were like 200 switchboard operators sitting at desks. And this little like table, like it was all done like, you know, a mom and pop situation. This is how that network started. It was bizarre. So we go in and we're sitting there, and I wasn't taking any of this seriously. And we had these big posters, and they said, oh, we've got these limited edition, you know, artist proofs. And they weren't really cheap, but they weren't wildly expensive. But they were a little more than, you know, people didn't want to throw their money away on nothing. And but these were really beautiful prints. And they said, oh, we have the actors here from the show. And nothing was happening in this telephone room at all when we started. There was nothing going on. There were these people sitting at these images. So, you know, Mark starts... So, Betty, that's a damn you, Joker. So we just started back and forth with the voices, and then he started laughing, and I started screaming, and then we started, like, fighting at the table. Every light in the room went off. It's like, people go, yeah, you want a dozen? You want a dozen? Yeah. They sold these things in 5 minutes. They sold that immediately. And it was all because of just the two of us playing. So when you put actors together who really like each other, it's like playtime. And the work just comes alive. And it was so interesting to watch. It was like a Rorschach test, you know. Everyone, immediately you could see, everyone just, every phone lit up because people registered because of the characters.
Wonder Woman.
Oh, thank you. My question is, what advice would you give to future DC animators or also future DC actors?
Well, I'll speak to the actors.
Thank you.
Just be good at what you do, and that goes for animators as well. The animators, you know, there's tons of great schools for animation out there, especially obviously in the LA area, but there's also a lot of schools in Canada for animation. If you can get yourself into one of those schools and really apply yourself and really you know, do your thing. A lot of these schools have internships. A lot of them have placement centers, and they can get you in touch with either agents or actual people who are hiring.
How has CGI affected that?
It's more expensive to do. The talent involved has to be of a higher caliber, and it is obviously the wave of the future.
Right.
At the same time, there's still plenty of markets for the 2D stuff. This. Three or four cartoon channels. I mean, when I was a kid, it was Saturday morning for 4 hours. That was it. Now it's everywhere. I do think that animation is booming. They keep hiring more and more people at Warner's alone. And we're doing, you know, Lego tie-ins. They got Scooby-Doo's and Tom and Jerry's and Bugs Bunny projects all gone and all the DC superhero stuff. There's room for talented people. You do have to be good. But there's plenty of room, and it seems to just be growing. And, you know, I say good luck. And voice actors, I don't know how hard that is.
Let's see. Let's go. Hello, girl. There's like 8,000 hands all pointing over here, so I don't want to be that guy that doesn't call on her.
I think Arkham Knight, the most recent one. From an acting point of view, I got to really go places with that. I'm not going to say what they were because a lot of you haven't played it yet. I don't want to give a spoiler alert. But it goes to all kinds of psychological places that are very exciting for an actor to explore. I had a lot of fun doing that. People don't understand, though, that doing games is 100% different than doing shows. With shows, you've got 6 or 8 other actors, you're all together, it's like doing a radio play. You feed each other energy, you're acting with each other, you're bouncing things off of each other. The 2 hours goes so fast, and the show's done, and then it's edited by the editors. With a game like Arkham Knight, there are 36,000 lines of dialogue in that game. It took 2 years to record. I feel like I have 30,000 of those lines. I know I don't, but it felt like that. And you're doing it because of the way the game is played and built structurally, it has to be separate. You have to be alone. So you're alone in a booth for 4 hours at a block. Then they give you an hour off to break, and then you come in for an afternoon 4-hour session. And you do that 5 days in a row for one block of recording. Then they go off and they write more, and then you're brought back in again to do it again. And this goes on for like a year, year and a half, 2 years, just to build that game. It's a very, it's not the kind of acting that any acting school can prepare you for, because you have to be completely self-motivated, you have to feed yourself energy, you have to keep the character alive, you have to keep the voice alive. And then they say, okay, now do that with a little irony. Keep the irony, and we need a little more humor. Okay, we love the humor and the irony. Now just turn the knife a little bit, you know. And you're just trying to tweak these lines depending on how the game is played. They want all these different takes on all these different lines. By the end of the week, you sort of don't know how to speak English anymore. Seriously.
It really is funny, because when I watch you guys do this stuff, sometimes they'll ask you to do the same line 3 times, 5 times, 10 times. By the end of some of these runs, they're just sounds. They're not words anymore.
Yes.
It's just noise. But it's, and then they pick the first one you did.
Exactly. Did you say you had to like just physically remove yourself from the building at one point and just like?
Oh yeah, sometimes I just like, have to go outside, just get out of there, or go outside, you know, just to shake it out, because just to, you know, you just it's like a vacuum. It's so weird recording these games.
All right, so we've got a couple minutes here, Mike. I want to talk real quick about what's coming up. We mentioned The Killing Joke, so we know it's coming up. But officially, no official word yet on any casting choices.
No official word, not for me.
I'm starring in all the new DC films. He doesn't want to tell you that.
I'm the only guy that can stop it.
We don't want anybody to get in trouble today for anything. We got Bad Blood. I think it's
The next one out is Batman Bad Blood, and that is going to introduce the Batwoman character into the Batman family, nice. As well as Batwing. So we're going to really expand the Batman family with this project.
And Justice League versus Titans.
After that is Justice League versus Titans. What we're happiest about in that respect is that for the last few years, The marketing people of the world have been telling us that the only ones that will sell are Justice League and Batman projects. And we really believe that that's not the world we live in anymore. There's going to be 7 DC TV shows on next year. There's 2 to 3 DC movies rolling through the movie theaters in the next 5 years. The world is ready to see what the rest of the DC universe involves. It will still involve Batman. It will still involve Superman. But it will hopefully expand our reach. So if the Justice League meet the Titans, maybe we'll be able to get a Titan solo movie out there, which would be really great.
There's a new superhero being introduced by DC. He was an Irish-American, middle-aged man.
Yes,
that would be great. And then The Killing Joke is apparently happening after that.
Mike and Kevin are going to be signing downstairs. I know you guys have to get downstairs. Great questions, guys. Really appreciate it. How about a hand for these people? Tremendous questions from the fans, no doubt. Had a blast chatting with Kevin Conroy and Mike Carlin. Glad I could bring that session to you. If you're new to Comic Book Central, again, you might have missed my in-depth interview with Kevin Conroy back on episode 21. So you're going to want to go back to the archive at the website, comicbookcentral.net. Check that out. Again, you subscribe on iTunes, you get it that way. Download the episode, hear all about Kevin's fantastic adventures and much, much more. As always, my thanks to Mitch Halleck and the Terrificon team. Their website, terrificon.com. Check it out. Check them out on Twitter. Check them out on Facebook. You get to see all these pictures. You get to see a bunch of different things, and you get a jump on next year's show. You want more Terrificon? You're going to get more Terrificon, but you're going to have to wait, true believers, because next week on Comic Book Central,
It is the dramatic conclusion of my two-part Comic Book Central at Terrificon Treasury Size Special Edition. You're going to hear from Comic Book Men's Ming Chen, Thor's Walt Simonson, and you'll get another VIP front row seat. This time, it's going to be my Q&A session with the original Scarlet Speedster, John Wesley Shipp. That is next week. Don't forget, September 19th, my in-depth interview with one of the stars of Heroes Reborn, and he's in the new Star Wars movie as well. Greg Grunberg will join me here in the lair. That's what's coming up. Until then, you have yourself a terrific con week. Keep reading those comics, and thanks for joining me here in the lair. Comic Book Central, where comic books come to life. This podcast is intended for entertainment and education purposes only. All original content in this podcast is the intellectual property of Comic Book Central and is licensed under Creative Commons Attribution, Non-Commercial, No Derivations, 3.0 imported license. All the content and names are registered trademarks and copyrights of their respective holders.
Am I blue? Am I blue? Ain't these tears in my eyes telling you? Am I blue? You'd be too if each plan that you had done fell through.